Okay, let's unpack this. We are doing a deep dive into what is, I think, arguably the most strategically important superhero sequel on the horizon. The Batman Part 2. It's set for October 2, 2026. And this is way more than just, you know, casting calls or set rumors. We've synthesized what looks like the complete narrative blueprint.
And what we found suggests that director Matt Reeves is getting ready to push Bruce Wayne and Gotham City into a completely new and much, much colder phase.
That's the critical takeaway right from the jump, isn't it?
It is. If you loved the first film's grimy, grounded detective feel, you need to prepare for an evolution.
Okay.
The material we've looked at indicates this sequel is not just a bigger version of the first one. It's a complete strategic overhaul. Our mission today is to prepare you for a film that is shaping up to be smarter, colder, and way more personal for Bruce Wayne.
A strategic overhaul is necessary, though, because Gotham itself is, well, it's unrecognizable from the city we left in those floodwaters. So if the first film saw Batman fighting these sort of disorganized old school mobsters, where does this new war for Gotham even start?
It starts right in that power vacuum, the one left when Carmine Falcone was taken out. And you absolutely have to factor in the events of the Penguin series.
Right. That show is critical context.
It is, because the world Bruce is coming back to is so much more dangerous. Oswald, Oz Cobb, Colin Farrell's character, was incredibly successful at consolidating power. He didn't just step into Falcone's shoes. He completely remade the entire structure of organized crime.
So Oz didn't just rebuild the mob. He industrialized it.
That's the perfect word for it. He filled that vacuum with what the sources call brutality and cunning. So Bruce is no longer fighting a messy, recognizable mob. He's up against a full-blown, organized syndicate. And that changes everything about his job description.
Because crime isn't something he can just stop with an uppercut anymore.
No.
It's the air the city breathes now.
Precisely. The blueprint we're seeing details a Gotham where the police are just demoralized, the politicians are bought, and crime is fundamentally systemic. So just think about the limitation that puts on Batman's original approach.
You mean his fear tactics?
Yeah, the whole I am the shadows thing.
Right. Fear works when you're dealing with, like, low-level street thugs who are worried about getting punched in a dark alley.
But those tactics are meaningless to a kingpin like Oz Cobb, who, as the outline puts it, owns the city. The system is now designed to protect him. It's designed to protect the criminals at the top. So this forces Bruce Wayne to completely rethink his entire method. He can't just be beating people up anymore. Mm. The mission has to be about dismantling systems.
And to dismantle systems, you need influence, not just muscle, but the public threat, the villain that forces this change. All the loudest rumors point to someone deeply psychological. Clayface.
And that is the ultimate pivot point for this whole story. What's so fascinating is how Matt Reeves is expected to adapt this character to fit his grounded noir style.
Yeah, because mainstream audiences, they hear Clayface and they just think of a giant CGI mud monster.
And our deep dive suggests a much different and, I think, much scarier path.
So we're not getting a biological monster. We're getting deception.
We're getting pure deception. The blueprint strongly predicts Reeves is going back to the original 1940s golden age version of the character, Basil Carlo.
Okay, so who is Basil Carlo in this context?
He's a disgraced character actor, a master of disguise, of makeup, of impersonation. In this grounded, paranoia-laced world, his power isn't physical mass. It's the ability to steal identities.
That's terrifying.
The threat shifts from brute force to something purely psychological.
That almost sounds like a horror film setup. It turns Gotham into this landscape of just intense distrust.
Absolutely. The real danger is a villain who can physically impersonate the mayor or Commissioner Gordon or, terrifyingly, maybe even Bruce's closest allies. Imagine Gordon acting erratically or Alfred seeming distant. Batman can't be sure who's real. This brings in a theme of just suffocating paranoia. It's reminiscent of those classic thrillers where the enemy is already inside the base.
Like The Thing or something.
Exactly like The Thing. The monster is already inside the compound and you have no idea who to trust.
So if the villain's whole method is deception, changing faces every single day, the world's greatest detective is suddenly in a case where he literally cannot trust his own eyes.
That is the core conflict.
Yeah.
The key insight we pulled is that the name Clayface refers to his ability to mold his identity, not his biology.
Ah, okay.
This forces Bruce to rely on evidence that is purely forensic, purely intellectual. He can't rely on recognition. He has to solve a whodunit where the killer is a different person every single time he strikes. It's the ultimate test of his detective skills.
Which means, if he has to fight deception on that level, he can no longer afford to be the awkward, isolated vigilante we saw in the first film. He has to fight a mask with his own mask.
Precisely. And that need to fight systemic rot and physical deception leads perfectly into Bruce Wayne's own personal journey. In the first film, Bruce was defined by being a recluse, you know, totally indifferent to the Wayne family legacy. He just wanted the shadows.
And the end of the Batman was his forced realization that vengeance wasn't enough. He had to become a symbol of hope.
And that transformation is the narrative engine of part two. The central conflict for Bruce is literally defined as learning to be Bruce Wayne.
He has to wear the mask of the billionaire playboy, and I can't imagine he's happy about that.
He despises it. It is a performance, and the material suggests it's painful for him. To fight the syndicate that Oz built and unmask this deep deception, Bruce has to go into the boardrooms, the charity galas, all the high society stuff he hates.
That sets up such an incredible internal struggle. He's forced to put on a suit, a charming smile, but he hates every single second of it.
It's the pain of wearing the playboy mask. That's the rich narrative vein that Reeves is tapping into. We're going to see a Bruce who is awkward, uncomfortable, visibly struggling to keep up the facade.
That there's a twist, right?
There's a clever twist. While he's shaking hands and mingling, he's simultaneously using that access to mentally solve the crime scenes Clayface is creating. The physical Batman is on the streets. The public Bruce Wayne is solving the systemic crime.
He has to be the ultimate detective, even without the cowl on.
But the cost is his entire personal peace. He has to risk his own identity to save the city.
And as Bruce is forced out of his shell, the supporting cast becomes that much more important. They have to anchor him, add that humanity that was sort of missing in part one.
Yeah, if Bruce is learning to be a man again, he needs relationships that force him toward empathy, not just efficiency. And the material strongly, strongly points to the introduction fans have been waiting for.
Dick Grayson.
Dick Grayson.
So in this grounded universe, how do you introduce the Boy Wonder without derailing the whole tone? I mean, we're not expecting red and green tights right away.
Oh, definitely not. The plot is rumored to involve Haley Circus, which places Dick Grayson, a young orphan, right in the middle of the city's organized crime story.
Okay.
The focus is on the parallel trauma. Bruce sees a boy lose his parents in a similar violent way, probably connected to the Penguin's expanding racketeering.
So Bruce is basically looking in a mirror.
Exactly. The core motivation isn't, I need a partner. It's about saving this boy from becoming another soul defined only by vengeance. Mm-hmm. Taking Dick in, Bruce is forced into this role of responsibility, of guardianship. It adds a crucial layer of humanity to Pattinson's very cold performance.
It reframes Robin from a sidekick to a moral anchor for Bruce. Speaking of anchors, but the twisted kind. We have Barry Keoghan's Joker locked in Arkham. Is he going to be the main threat?
Highly unlikely. That would just undermine the brilliance of the whole Clayface deception plot. Instead, the blueprint shows Reeves is positioning the Joker as a true Hannibal Lecter figure.
Oh, I love that dynamic.
It works perfectly, doesn't it? Batman can't solve the Clayface case with his fists. He needs to understand a mind driven by theatricality, disguise, performance.
All things the Joker knows intimately.
Exactly. Their relationship will be intellectual, symbiotic. It's the ultimate Manhunter dynamic. Batman visits the Joker not for a fight, but for a psychological consultation. He needs the Joker's twisted insight into this new killer, which keeps the Joker fresh and impactful without needing him to, you know, blow up the city.
Okay, so if Basil Carlo is carrying out these assassinations, these deceptions, someone has to be hiring the actor. The whodunit must point deeper. Who are the real puppet masters here?
And this is where we connect the institutional rot back to the city's dark history, the Court of Owls.
Ah.
While Clayface is the immediate threat, the sources all suggest the underlying mystery points to this secret society of Gotham's elite.
It makes perfect thematic sense with the focus on systemic historical corruption.
It's a perfect fit. The Court of Owls, this ancient society of wealthy families, they represent the entrenched, silent power that allows someone like Ozcop to even exist. Clayface is the weapon, but the court is the generational rot.
What's fascinating here is, what's their angle? If Oz's syndicate is so chaotic, maybe the court sees him as a threat to their silent control.
That's the implication. Mm. The court could be this shadow organization using actors and assassins like Clayface to purge the city of the Penguin's chaotic influence. They want to restore their own quiet, ancient control.
So Batman gets caught in a massive crossfire.
A huge one. He's fighting Carlo's physical violence, the syndicate's entrenched power, and the vast historical power of the court, all at the same time. He's fighting a multi-generational conspiracy.
The stakes are just astronomical. Finally, we have to talk about the look of the film, the visual language, because the aesthetic shift that's mentioned is dramatic.
It is.
If the first film was defined by rain, the sequel is going to be defined by snow, this winter noir.
And this is not just a set dressing choice. The setting fundamentally changes the detective work and the action. Cinematographer Greg Fraser is planning an aesthetic defined by dirty snow, ice, and just biting cold.
How does that change the practicalities of being Batman?
Well, in a few ways. First, stealth. Snow muffle sound, right? So that actually makes his silent approaches even more effective.
But on the flip side?
On the flip side, snow is the ultimate evidence collector. Footprints, tire tracks, everything is impossible to hide. The evidence that Clayface leaves and the evidence Batman leaves is now crystal clear.
It turns the entire city into one giant high contrast crime scene.
Absolutely. The visual contrast is stunning. The black armor against the pure white snow. And yeah, violence becomes instantly more visceral. Blood just pops against that white backdrop. But the most important change is the ticking clocks the cold creates.
The cold itself becomes a weapon.
A deadly one. If Batman is looking for a kidnapping victim or a witness left exposed by Clayface, that person can literally freeze to death before he gets there. The urgency is multiplied. It's not just about the Riddler's next move. It's about time running out before the weather itself kills the victim.
So, okay, let's put it all together. What does this all mean for the story? We have this systemic threat, the deception of Clayface, Bruce's painful new role, and the urgency of the winter noir. It paints a really intense picture.
It does. This deep dive reveals that The Batman Part 2 is shaping up to be a true tragedy in three acts. It demands that Bruce Wayne evolve from a purely vengeful vigilante into a true symbol of public influence. He has to step out of the darkness to fight the shadows.
The blueprint concludes that the long Halloween is over, which was that chaotic, rainy era of Part 1.
But the silent night has just begun. And that silent, freezing night represents this new era of quiet, entrenched, invisible corruption. It means Bruce can't hide from the public face of the city anymore.
Which leaves a fundamental thematic question for you to think about. Given the systemic corruption, the paranoia of Clayface, the cold silence of the snow, the question isn't if Batman wins, but how. What type of hero is actually required to survive a silent night, one who fights with his fists, or one who has to fight with influence? That's the real conflict Bruce Wayne has to solve to save a city and, you know, maybe himself.